Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode. Even if you're in a position where you don't love it right now, or you don't know if it's the right spot for you, it doesn't mean you have to interview for new jobs, but it does mean that you need to keep connecting with more people. We've been misled to believe that dentistry, more specifically the dental business, has to be complicated. Dentistry can be simple, and dentistry should be simple. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Dentistry Made Simple podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Tarun Agrawal, better known as T-Bone, and I am not being joined by Meredith this week. We have put her in time out, okay? But instead, we're continuing on with our series on associateships in dentistry, and I figured I would take the risk and bring on the associate at our practice. I like to call her our associate partner, Dr. Katie Hetrick. Katie, how are you doing?
Wonderful. Thank you for having me on.
Are you uncomfortable?
A little bit, but I'm working through it.
Perfect. We don't have a choice, right?
Yeah.
Let's give everybody a little background on what we want to try to cover today and all of that. So, look, my philosophy is simple. If your associate is successful, you're going to be successful. We've got to stop this mentality that associate serves a very specific role in the practice and that we want to hold them back. In fact, we want to do the exact opposite. We want to lift, and we want to continue to grow them. That doesn't mean that we want to give them complete autonomy to do whatever the hell they want, but we need to have a path in place. And what I love about bringing Katie on is several things, and I hope I don't offend you with this next statement, and I was telling her, for me, one practice is not so good has been another practice. My practice is treasure. And so I want to leverage that experience, not about the specific place that she was at, but her specific experiences about what makes an associateship work and not work. And then I want to selfishly talk about some of the things that she was concerned about in our practice, or that the paradigms kind of changed for her as an associate in our practice. So that's kind of what I want to talk about in this week's episode. Does that sound fair, Katie?
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, tell everybody how we're connected.
So I first met T-Bone through our Patterson rep when I was doing some work to try to move to a new city and get a job. We have a connection because my dad was the dean of the UMKC Dental School when T-Bone was there.
Yeah, that's amazing. And to this day, she has not gotten my transcripts to find out where in the class I ranked.
I did bring him for a visit, though.
Twice
now.
But he doesn't remember. He probably doesn't remember me that much, and he certainly doesn't remember. He doesn't remember the bottom third. The bottomers of the class, you know?
So. But he's very proud of how high you've risen.
Well, that's only because he sees one part of it. So, all right, so talk to us about your associateship experience, what brought you to this, and then we'll continue to dive. Give everybody some background on off script a little bit. Why do you want to be an associate?
So I have been a little unsure about life moves I was making as far as geographically where I wanted to be. So I didn't want to commit to purchasing a practice. And that has led me to 4 associateships.
Okay. All right. And some are good, some are not so good.
Yeah. I learned from all of them. Some I would say were definitely like long-term positive experiences. Mm-hmm. And then others, not so much.
All right. So that's good. So we got a background. And would you say your 4 experiences have been uniquely different? Like, it's not like you went from one practice that's another practice that's very like it to another practice like it, where they like corporates, multi-locations, you know, private practice, boutique practice, you know?
Yes. Very different things. Okay. Growing practices, established practices, multiple locations. Yep. All those
and
things.
Just so people don't think like you're one of those associate flakes, it's not like you've done 4 practices in 4 years.
No. I graduated dental school in 2013. I did 2 years of an AGD residency, and that puts me at like 8 years out. So okay. 4 associates.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Years.
Yeah. That's not bad. And you just moved to North Carolina in 2019.
Right.
Yeah. So let's go back for a second. So we didn't work with each other in 2019. In fact, Chuck introduced you to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so you came for a shadow.
Yep.
You know, and tell me what was your experience like coming to the office and seeing what we were doing?
Yeah. So you were very upfront that you didn't have a position for me, but you were open to kind of a meet and greet and a shadow. So you let me spend the day with you. And I got to meet the team, who were so friendly. When you walk in the door, you feel like a big difference mm-hmm. than some places where there's someone on the phone, like kind of brushing you off. And then you're just really open with me about your philosophies, your goals for the future. And you ask me a lot of questions about me and what I wanted.
Yeah, is that unique? Is that different that people ask you about you?
Yeah.
I mean, how is you supposed to know how to help people if you don't ask what they want?
Right.
All right. So one of the things that you mentioned in our pre-conversation is that looking back, you said you would know very quickly if something was going to work or not. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about that.
Yes. So I spent about 2.5-3 years at a great practice that I really enjoyed. The next step that I made with a geographic change I thought would be okay, but wasn't a good fit from the start. My sister even says when she would talk to me on the phone that within the first week or 2 weeks, she knew it wasn't going to work.
What made her say that?
The way I would talk about it after work, not complaining wise, but just that I wasn't excited and engaged.
Okay.
And I should have listened to myself more instead of wasting more time there.
Okay. And what would you tell somebody if they're feeling that right now?
If you're in that situation, there are better opportunities out there. You know, you can spend time connecting with people that even if it's not a right this second change, you would be able to plan something for the future.
Well, and that's kind of like our situation, correct?
Right.
You know, if we had kind of give you guys some context here. So Katie came down. She was moving here from Buffalo, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. right? In 2019. I didn't know your dad was the dean at that point. So dean of my school when I went to school. And but we came down. We kind of had conversations, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, it wasn't the right time for me. We weren't in a position. But because of that connection that you made, at some point in the future when you were looking for something different, it made you reach back out.
Absolutely.
Into that. So I think, you know, I want to kind of build on what Katie was saying. So even if you're in a position where you don't love it right now, or you don't know if it's the right spot for you, it doesn't mean you have to interview for new jobs, but it does mean that you need to keep connecting with more people because you never know when you're going to get the courage to leave or get forced to leave or need to leave or finally just say, I want to leave, any number of things. So those connections are always super important to kind of keep the pipeline open.
Yeah, and it may end up kind of bumping you above a different candidate too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I applied for your position through a job website, but I also texted you to tell you, hey,
but
I tried
you had my
for
phone
this,
number, I think.
Because I had your phone number.
Yeah. Absolutely. I remembered you.
Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good. Yeah, another thing that you said that I find fascinating and interesting And I want to kind of get your the opposite side of me as the employer, quote unquote employer. I hate thinking of myself as the boss. You know, I'd rather think of you as the boss, and I just show up and do the work sometimes. You said interviews aren't enough. What do you mean by that?
Yes. So lots of people will say something in an interview because they think that that's what you want to hear. And people maybe aren't their authentic self. You can't see the true culture of the practice. I've found that when I spent time in the offices a day or two, or if you can do, you know, an afternoon or two, whatever your schedule is, the more time you're in the office and you see the relationships between team members, between doctors and the team, how the patients are treated, that's going to tell you what it'll be like when you're there.
So can you give us any specific examples of things that stuck out to you? As sad as it is, I don't remember that secondary part of it. You know, I know we met again, and I talk about team autonomy at some point, but I kind of turned you over to somebody else in the office at that point, not to hire you, but to kind of schedule all when you could come, because I don't want to get involved in that.
Yeah,
all I'm going to do is get in the way. So,
yeah, there's that aspect of it that it doesn't have to be directly through the owner. So you can interact with the team members and see what that's like, as well as that you did something unique where you wanted a working interview, where you wanted to see my skills.
That's unique?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You wanted to see my skills. You wanted to see my conversations with patients during hygiene exams. And that helped me determine whether it was a good fit. And it showed me how committed you were to finding an associate who's a good fit.
Yeah. One thing I've always been pretty good at is the right cultural fit. That doesn't mean like black, white, or whatever. It just means personality fit, right? The culture of the practice, right? And that's always been more important to me than anything else, because you can destroy years and years of amazing work with one or two bad apples. I mean, it can really bring things down. And so to me, a cultural fit is always almost more important than anything else. I mean, good clinical skills are certainly there as well. And I've experienced people that are great personality fit and not a good clinical fit. I've seen people that are great clinical fit and not a good personality fit. And it kind of needs to be a blending of the two. Mm-hmm. So I want to kind of move into, so thank you for sharing that. Okay. I want to kind of move into some different things that, again, very selfish here. Okay. When we're working with our masterminders and different dentists that we're coaching, they often feel a traditional model of an associateship is the way to make it work, because that's what they've been taught. That's what they've been led to believe. And that has that translates to associates as well, that when they hear me talk about the way we do things, they almost say, well, that can't work as an associate, right? So I want to kind of talk about some of the paradigm shifts that you've experienced and talk about the feelings you had about them. And I want to give other people two things. I want to give associates the hope that there's things out there that fit what they believe dentistry could be. And I want to give owners out there to believe that, hey, I don't have to do things a way I was taught in the 1980s and 1990s, that there are newer things, newer ways of achieving success. So one of the things that stuck out to me, the thing to me that you said was that I talked to you about our one column, one dentist philosophy. Mm-hmm. Talk to me more about how you perceive that on the front end, what fears you had about that, and then seeing it on the other side, the reality of it, what does one column, one dentist really mean, and kind of what the outcomes of that have been so far for you.
Sure. This is the first place that I've worked that was not a two full column system. I've been at places.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
I've been at places where it was scheduled, let's say, smartly, and some places where it was just fill in the gaps. I remember on one of our first conversations, I told you that I like to be busy. Mm-hmm. And I remember you telling me, yeah, I don't like to be busy. I want to make the same amount of money and work fewer days. And I thought to myself, that's interesting. But
You didn't think I was lazy, did you?
No, I didn't think you were lazy, but I didn't know there was another way. And I felt like by telling you that I like to be busy, I was telling you, like, I have a good work ethic and I will fill the schedule and make you money your associate. Right. But I think that's the typical model.
Yeah.
So I was not sure that a single column model would be as productive as it is, because it allows you to be efficient, not rushed, form relationships with patients, and leaves you time to do other things like plan big cases that will bring you satisfaction and financial success.
Yeah, absolutely. So along those ways, so what does one column, one dentist literally mean that you only work in one chair?
No.
Okay. Let's go, because like people, when I say one column, one dentist, they think like literally it's one column, one dentist.
Right.
But it is, but it isn't. So let's kind of get the reality of that.
Sure. So there's one column of dentist-driven productive work. And then there is a side column that has the possibility to have limiteds or deliveries of night guards, things like that, that would be more assistant-driven. And those can fit in at a good time on the doctor's schedule than when something might be milling.
Yeah. And beyond that also is we still have two operatories that you can work out of, but like, so if one room's getting turned over, you can go to the other
absolutely.
Operatory as well. So, but the day, what's most important to me that you kind of mentioned there was the day starts with a one column philosophy. And then because we have to deal with unexpected emergencies or something else, or this patient runs over, then we don't go into utter chaos. Because something like last week, I had like on what was it? Wednesday, I worked yesterday. I had three emergency patients and I had a column already fully booked, but those three emergencies in a column where I had two columns and then the three emergencies on top of it, that throws the chaos in there. And the side effect of that is your diagnosis and hygiene goes down.
Absolutely.
And so that's really a problem there. So would you say that generally speaking, being a one column associate has been as productive as many of the other places you've been?
Absolutely.
Okay. So how do you become productive in one column?
How do you become productive in one column? A lot of it is fewer well-planned visits.
Buzzword.
Yeah. Focusing on like quadrant dentistry.
Okay.
Other things that have changed that are sedation.
Okay.
Like having one patient in your chair to get a lot done all at one time is much more productive than jumping around from side to side doing one or two fillings on lots of people.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love that. I didn't even coach you on that one. That's awesome. You know, because it's the things that we say and I, one of the, maybe this is my own insecurity, or I often feel that people say, well, you can, like me, they'll look at me and say, well, you can do it because you're this personality, right? Or you're this. And what people often don't realize is that's not my personality in the office. I'm much more subdued. I'm much, much more quieter and reserved and things like that. But the reason I love you saying those things is you're saying those things as the other dentist in the practice. And so when we can make it work for an associate, we for sure can make it work for the owner of the practice, because it's you're the owner. I mean, you should do what the hell you want to do, is how I look at it. Another thing that sticks out to me in some of our conversations has been team autonomy. So tell us about your experiences with working with team members, how team members kind of worked, and how we're doing it a little maybe differently.
Sure. So at other offices I've been required to micromanage the team, because my income is based on production. And if patients were given incorrect quotes or are unhappy with, you know, an insurance write-off, there's a write-off that has to be taken from me, and that affects my bottom line.
Yeah.
So in order to combat that.
And that's the same here too.
Yeah. Well, sure. Yeah. But in order to combat that, I would have to check after everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And here, the team is empowered to be in control of their own duties, let's say. I'm sure you have a better word for it.
Yeah, the responsibilities.
Their own responsibilities.
Yeah. They own their, it's an ownership mentality,
yes.
Right? They own that. Like, for example, in our practice, Olivia owns your treatment plans.
Right.
Like, she owns that patient from the time they walk out of the hygiene room to the time they get in your chair and get completed. They're the point of contact, right? And Olivia takes ownership of if the patient pays or doesn't pay and all of those things. Now, what else have you noticed about autonomy? What about with assistants?
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hey, podcast family. T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
So with the assistants, it's like they have ownership over their operatory. So they have, in advance, gone over charts and the schedule. They know what to expect and they're prepared. And we've had any conversations that we need to have about questions or complexity beforehand so that it's seamless the day of. And that brings the stress level down for everybody.
Yeah, for everybody.
For everybody. Not
for you and for the assistant, right? Yeah. For them, you know. And hopefully one of the things that we try to create and encourage through everything that we do is a two-way street. It's not just Dr. Hetrick talking to the assistant about things that we need to watch out. It's also the assistant saying, hey, let's watch out for these things, or let's watch out for that, or hey, let's consider this, because they have unique experiences based on whether they've done certain cases with me. Like when you're doing implants and you work with Whitney, she can give you a lot of things that, hey, here's how he handles this, or let's consider this, you know, and it works vice versa as well. So it's, communication has to be a two-way street, and I find that associates often struggle, or they often, I don't like to use the word complain, but they often mention and talk about how they don't feel that the team listens to them, or the team doesn't view them as the owner of the practice. And have you experienced that in the past?
So I have built our relationships on something different. A lot of it is I felt like I proved to them that I'm an ethical and conscientious clinician, so they believe in me, and that transfers to the patients. And the other thing about the team is it's not a hierarchy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not viewing myself above them, but below you.
Right.
And I try
to view myself below you. So
I've always been open with them and asking for feedback.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, or a lot of times, they have more experience with whatever it is, the particular patient, the implant system, the conversation, and we all can learn from each other.
Yeah, I love that. I think you know, going into things and really viewing the team as your path to success. Would you say that's fair?
100%.
I mean, the team is like successful associates in our practice. Let's say they're the same clinicians. It's all about the team buy-in. Like you could be here as the same, literally your twin could be here, clinically the same, everything's the same, but you spend no time getting to know the team and you make them feel like, hey, I'm this female dentist, because most of our team members, in our practice, all our team members are female, but in most of dentistry, most team members are female, and they often have this adversarial relationship with the female dentist.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've seen and experienced or heard other people tell me. So that you approached it that way has been, it's great. That, I think that's good for people to hear.
And I think that even if, as an associate, you don't have control over things like hiring, you still have control over coaching and like the people that you work with, you can encourage each other to be better so that it's a better work environment for everyone.
Yeah, that's awesome. So let's talk about something I get a lot of, I get feedback on. Okay. I'm very open with people that for me, I view an associate as doing the dentistry I don't want to do. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And was I pretty open with you about that when you came on, that you're going to do the dentistry I'm not doing?
You were, yeah, very clear about what I was going to do what you were going to do and maybe how things could change in the future.
Great. So let's talk. I want to talk about that.
Okay.
That how did that, how did you take that? And then how have you seen that? Because I'm surprised I'm letting you do the things I'm letting you do sometimes, right? But how has that evolution occurred? And because a lot of, and the reason I asked this, okay, I want to give the context is a lot of associates view getting into a position that, hey, I'm going to do the dentistry that nobody else wants to do, and there's no room for upward mobility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I want to kind of talk about that. What have we done to create that environment? And then what have you done to open that, to secure that opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the opportunity is always there, but not everybody's taken that opportunity, but you have. So I want to kind of talk about both. I want you to talk about both of those if we can.
Sure. So at my interview, even, you were very clear about how the office worked, what procedures you were comfortable with me doing, and what things you were going to do. You set goals for me of 4 things that you wanted me to accomplish by a certain time. You wanted me to master CEREC and the root canal system and do more molars in our office, and then work towards other things. And as I accomplished those and proved myself to you, we continued to change the goals to more things that I wanted to excel at. So moving into surgical things like extraction and graft, implant placement, and implant restorations.
Perfect. So there's a success path.
A success path.
Yeah. You know, and so while you talk about extraction grafts and implants, let me take an opportunity to give a commercial for our tooth replacement therapy digital implant continuum. If you are new to dental implants and want to move into implant dentistry in the digital world, we have the program for you at 3D Dentists. It's called our digital implant continuum, the tooth replacement therapy program. We focus on extraction and graft, socket preservation for future implants. We focus on guided surgery to place implants in the right spot. And we focus on digital impressions to take impressions so that you can produce a digital restoration, whether that's chairside or with the laboratory. And so, Katie, you took our implant continuum. And what was your experience level before? What has been your implant experience before?
So during residency and private practice, I had placed about 40 to 50 implants. But I still, after that, was not totally comfortable. They weren't guided, which makes a big difference. And when I took the digital implant continuum course, it was a total game changer because that's another procedure that you can excel at with low stress by using, you know, your brain, really.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Using the scans and the equipment. This doesn't have to be something where you're waiting on bated breath to look at the x-ray to make sure it's in the right spot. You know it's
kind of like
the
after you do an endo, right?
Yeah. You know it's in the right spot. And that's like just amazing to the practice, your success level, your stress level. It changed everything for me.
You know, one of the things that our team shared with me after you took the implant program is that you came back the following month and did, I think, almost 10 to 15 extractions with socket grafting. And your number, and the reason I bring this up is it's not like your at-bats changed. You know, it's not like you had double the hygiene to check or you had more new patients or the consults don't come to you for that right now. You know, so how did you, I find that amazing that you can go, we can learn something and then we can go back and put it into practice. How did you find that? Because associates struggle with that often. Is they'll go learn something, they'll go back in the practice, and they can't put it into place. Do you remember what I'm talking about here?
Absolutely.
And what were some of the key points you'd kind of share with people on that?
Yeah, so the two main things for me were reading the CBCT. So you find a lot of problems that may be asymptomatic, but are still very important. Mm-hmm. A lot of infected teeth that need to be removed. And then the second thing is having the conversation with the patient, not about, let's do an extraction graft, but do you want to replace this tooth? We have a great option for you, and taking it from that point.
So I call that, for those of you listening, I call that layered case acceptance. We don't start off with the solution. We start off with the decision tree. The decision tree is, do you want to replace this tooth? Okay. If the answer is no, then it's a simple extraction, or maybe we don't even do anything. Maybe we leave the asymptomatic tooth alone. Right? Or slightly symptomatic alone, whatever. Okay. Or if they say, yes, we want to replace it, then they've already diagnosed and you say, well, this is what it needs. It needs this. It's going to take 3 visits. It's going to take 9 months, blah, 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 X, Y, Z. And it's going to cost roughly X, you know? And so I'm super proud of you that you were able to go back and put it into play. And we call it TRT, tooth replacement therapy. And I love it when you bring that up. And to me, what's so important about that is that's planting seeds. One, extraction graft is way more productive. And how long does the graft take you itself?
Oh, maybe 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? Yeah. You know, maybe 3 to 5 minutes, right?
To
do the graft itself. But then what you're doing is you're planting a seed for the future implant and, more importantly, the abutment and the crown, which in our world, since we're a chairside office, I mean, the abutment and crown is, it's no work. I mean, somebody else does it for us, for God's sakes. So that to me is some of the magic there. And for me, I want other people to know that, you know, I'm evolving and growing as well to where we're giving away some of this stuff to another dentist. But that didn't start without earning the trust and working the process. So to the associates out there that are eager to do what I do, right? Or do what somebody else does, you know, you've got to put your time in. That doesn't mean it's got to be the old school way. You got to put your 20 years in, but you got to put the time in. You got to put the effort in. You got to earn the right to do that. And earning the right could be 6 months. It could be 12 months. It could be 18 months. For you, it was much faster than we probably talked about or anticipated. But you got to earn that right. And that's always important as an associate to remember, especially if you're an associate that's conscientious, that wants to be better, that wants to be great at what you do. You got to learn to be that. Okay, I think we've had a great conversation today. Is there anything else you'd like to share with people or any advice you'd give to people?
Absolutely. I would say, even if you're in an associate position where you don't have mentorship with the owner doctor that you're working for, you should find it out there in the community, whether it's through study clubs or online. If you're someone who wants to be constantly growing and learning, it's helpful to have a partner with more experience that can mentor you and coach you.
Yeah. All right. I'd like to have a conversation on this. We're not going to go away quite yet. Okay. Let's talk about how we work together as mentoring.
Okay.
To the mentor, mentee, whatever it is, right? Because oftentimes what I'll hear from my colleagues, the owners, is I don't have time, I'm busy, I'm this and that. And my argument to them is, and I say this humbly, I doubt they're any busier than me between work, second work, life, family. You know, I got a lot going on, right? Yeah. And so, but yet we still find the time to be a mentor, we just do it differently. So walk us through kind of how you, let's back up for a second. I don't ever come to you, very rarely do I come to you and say, do you need mentoring?
No,
right?
Yeah.
Because that's your job to ask for the mentor. That's how I view it, okay?
Yeah.
It's the associate's job to ask for the mentoring and to be that squeaky wheel. So how do you squeak?
So I would say even when I come to you and ask for mentorship, you tell me I need to figure out how to carve out time.
Okay.
So it's on me, which is totally fine. I usually will try to do as much of, let's say it's a treatment planning mentorship that I'm looking for. I'll try to gather the data and make my own plan. And then depending if you are around or not, I might email you, text you, call you, catch you when you're in the office. And then on your schedule, you can give me answers and we can have feedback.
Yeah. We've done email.
Mm-hmm.
We've done in person.
Yeah.
We've done text.
We've done FaceTime.
We've done Zoom, yeah. FaceTime. And so that's my point in all of this. Mentorship doesn't have to be this traditional model of knee-to-knee mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
Mentorship needs to be, hey, and when you get everything together, you know, when you have a certain experience level, I can look at something and in 5 minutes be like, all right, this is what I see, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or I can remember another case like, yeah, I remember this one. Don't do this.
Right.
Right. And so as a mentee, as an associate, you have to meet your mentor where they're at. Okay. That is a good mentorship relationship. You will get more mentoring if you meet them where they're at. Okay. So like I'm talking to Shake now and Shake, I'm telling Shake, you know, I'm going to have a hard time mentoring you when I'm in the office. So now we're going to have to do it from 3 to 5 or 3 to 4. Like we're going to have to do it from after work until the first hour afterwards and we can pre-schedule it. You know, and I remember many times I told you just block it on my schedule, block the patient, block the time, just make it happen and I'll be here and we'll do it. Has the mentorship been helpful for you?
Oh yeah. It's been amazing.
Like what? What's been helpful?
I like it when I stump you with a case.
Yeah, me too. I don't like that, but I do.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, everybody, thank you for tuning in this week. If you want to get in touch with Dr. Hetrick, you want to try to steal her, it's drh@RaleighDentalArts.com. And if you have questions for her, she's happy to answer them. And look, our goal here at the podcast and at 3D Dentists is to help us have better practices and better lives. You know, we can't have a better life if we don't have a better work environment. And so, you know, we work to fulfill our life, not fulfill our life to work, you know, speaking of someone from experience in that, so we have to learn from that. And so, an associateship doesn't mean that you're failing. It doesn't mean that you're not succeeding. An associateship doesn't have to be a corporate environment. It doesn't have to be a boutique environment. It doesn't have to be a traditional model. It can be what you expect it to be, what you make of it, and how you own that in your practice or that in your work environment. So thank you guys this week. And Katie, thank you for being part of us and staying afterwards and doing this.
Of course.
I love having you in the practice. I was joking about anybody stealing her.
Okay, but you can check me out on Instagram, Dr. Katie Hetrick, DDS.
Sweet. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.